Cool, Matt. Well, I'm going to run through real quick and do an intro to for those of us who who are listening, who may be new here. Welcome to OnChain Alpha. This is a weekly podcast where we explore the world of on-chain data. We're unpacking valuable insights and novel applications of on-chain data together with the people who are building the most innovative data infrastructure, analytics platforms, and writing your favorite threads and articles. Make sure to sign up to our newsletter at cryptosapiens.xyz. We want to make sure that we thank the people who make this possible: Mosaic, the Optimism Collective, and Bankless DAO. So today we're talking to Andrew, and we're going to be talking about a few things that he's involved in, including Dune, but not only Dune. So what's up, Andrew? How are you doing?
Good, good. Happy to be here. Excited to chat more data.
Yeah, great to have you. I mean, we've been talking a bit, and I think we even tried to record this podcast many moons ago.
Yes.
And I think we got the tech figured out. So why don't you give us an intro to yourself, just generally, and then what you do at Dune. But more importantly also, what do you do outside of Dune?
Yeah, definitely. I'm happy to chat through it. But I mean, I've been in the crypto space since 2020, part of the COVID wave. So I can officially say this is my second cycle, and I'm more of a veteran this time, hopefully. I got into this space just through ETH Global, did a bunch of like hackathons, freelancing very quickly. Like, I think the first thing I tell people to understand is like, go and understand the culture, like understand how communities in crypto work. Like, that's more important than like picking up any technical or non-technical skill in the space. Once you start to understand like, oh, this is how like Ethereum research is related to Flashbots, is related to like these Dune people, is related to like whatever, like Optimism Token House. Like, once you're able to see the dots, it's just so much easier to navigate the space. So basically that was my journey in crypto, was connecting those dots. Ended up at Dune about 2 years ago, leading education, been doing data education in the space for longer than that. Run 30-day courses, have my own newsletter, have a group we'll talk about later on. Anything data related on any chain, really, Bitcoin, Solana, Ethereum, Cosmos, is all exciting to me and all stuff that I cover.
Rad. I read your bio and it says you're previously Consensus, previously Mirror. Tell us a little bit about that and how that kind of was formative to your experience going into Dune and to your own personal experiments.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think Consensus, Mirror, and Dune are all very different companies, very different cultures. I went into Consensus first just because I was like, I was working at a big bank at the time, Barclays, and I was like, I don't know if I want to join like a 6-person DeFi startup right off the bat. That seems a bit aggressive. So joined Consensus, had a lot of fun talking with like people like Dan from MetaMask, the Infura team, learning from like what was called like the Hyperledger Basu team and Codify team at the time. Really just spent 6 months there helping out with some of their consulting stuff, learning like, okay, here's how leaders in the space kind of think, and like meeting people deeper in the industry. And then bull market kicked in. I was doing more Dune stuff, and Graham, who was the CTO at Mirror at the time, saw one of my Twitter threads and was like, hey, do you want to help us do like a right airdrop and like help us design some like token mechanisms better? And kind of snowballed from there, went to Mirror. We did a bunch of experiments through the whole hot DAO summer was what it was called at the time. We did crowd funds, we did auctions, we did Dutch auctions, we did splits, also publishing, of course. A lot of stuff that you still see in the space today. It's not by Mirror anymore, but like 0x splits was originally kind of like came from something that we did at Mirror, you know. So that was exciting to like learn protocol development cycles, experiment with consumer crypto, learned a lot of things that like help me better navigate like the stuff happening on Farcaster now, just because I'm like, oh, okay, I see some similarities here. And then ended up at Dune, which is more like SaaS, Web2 SaaS, for lack of a better sense, but with like a very crypto native community. So very different culture, working experience, and whatnot. But I think all three kind of added together give me a more like realistic view of crypto. Like, I'm not all the way out on the side being like, oh yeah, like DAOs are the future of everything, and like every single thing is going to be decentralized. We can just launch a token. There doesn't need to be revenue. I'm a little in the middle of like, okay, I do think things should be crypto native where it makes sense. But you also have to have like a sustainable organization, a sustainable business model, there's like a balance to it. So,
yeah, no, 100%. I think that we need to be realistic when we're building products, when we're creating businesses in this space, they need to be sustainable. And, you know, it's, I'm all for building things for the public good, but, you know, there needs to be some sort of, you know, mechanism to support the development, the people that are building it, which, you know, it's funny, I'm wearing my Fun What Matters Gitcoin sweater right now, which, you know, that's one mechanism, you know, Optimism, RPGF, that's another mechanism, right? They all kind of are in line and kind of similar, I guess, philosophical kind of theories of how we can support this type of development. But yeah, 100% agree. I mean, I think that there comes a point where you then can become self-sustaining and hopefully then a participant in these public goods ecosystems too by supporting them, which I think we've seen a lot of projects, including Dune, if I'm not mistaken, supporting those ecosystems too.
Yeah, yeah. It's a messy concentric circles. Everyone's cycles are like kind of tied together.
Yeah. All the circles on my shirt is pretty true. For those that can see it, I think that's pretty accurate. Yeah,
kind of looks like that, but even messier. But yeah, public goods do get funded. There is a cycle, still finding long-term sustainability, but you know, it's directionally there.
Yeah. 100%. So not to go too far back, because I think we do want to talk about data, but you, it's interesting that you, when you talked about Mirror, you said there was all of these experiments and publishing. I think when you think of like Web3, the creator economy, Mirror definitely has been at the forefront of, you know, innovation and supporting that. And I mean, we're starting to see that now also through Farcaster, different mechanisms that are being kind of built out through that social graph. Do you think we've come a long way? Or are we just still kind of playing with the same tools when it comes to like build or supporting the creators in this ecosystem through economical tools like Mirror, for instance?
I see. Yeah, I mean, it's a good, great question. I've been meaning to write a post about this, but I think like we've come a long way in terms of like unbundling things that we tried to bundle all in one product before, right? So like, I think for Mirror, it used to be like, you have your account mechanism, which is your wallet. You have like basically roles and whatnot, which are also tied to wallets. You have to sign messages. Everything had to be on chain. Like the full crowdfund had to be on chain. And like we also try to issue the tokens as well. So like if you do a crowdfund, you have to use Mirror's like ERC-20 token, you know? So it's like, everything's fully on chain. We're trying to build the full stack while trying to make it work with like wallets, which like half the time some DAO would have like a Gnosis safe. And then like, I mean, if you've been in this space for a while, this is not shit at Gnosis, but like there's always signing issues when you're like trying to like do wallet connect with the safe app. I think it's gotten better now, but back in 2021, like it wasn't great, you know? So I'm looking at stuff like Farcaster now and it's like, okay, they've done a good job abstracting kind of like their signing mechanism. They're not overly tied to like your wallet. Like if you need to do recovery, you can do a recovery. They're not tied to like every message being on chain, you know, like they understand that the community is okay with that. And they're not trying to force you. Like, yes, they have ways you can do like token gated groups or whatnot. And like now like Farcaster, like frame transactions, but they're not like forcing their token implementation in your face, you know, like I can go and use like DAO House or Station or Coinvise or something and like create an issue and manage my own tokens and then plug them into Farcaster in like basically just using JavaScript. I don't have to over-engineer like, I mean, this is where you get into some debate, but like with like the lens actions, I forgot what they're called. Like they're fully on chain, you know, and I think there are benefits to having like a fully on chain frame, but there's like developer overhead of learning how to deploy that. The costs are like, even with L2s, even with blobs, like it's still at least 3 to 10 cents to do something, you know? And like that impacts UX a lot, you know? So I think we've come a long way in figuring out like, okay, how do we unbundle an account? How do we unbundle like, oh, do people want to deploy contracts or they just want to deploy scripts? You know, like how do we lower the cost of things, make it easier to maintain, easier to grow? So it's a long-winded way of saying I think we've come a long way.
No, that's really good. You know, and I guess I want to tie this all into kind of some of the things that we started talking about from the very beginning. But yeah, I agree with you. I think I like this idea of like sufficient decentralization. I think that's kind of like the Farcaster meme, right? It's like, hey, look, we're sufficiently decentralized. And they're very honest about that, right? So anybody who is first kind of coming into the ecosystem, they're very well aware of how it works, how they can kind of get involved and how they can plug into that ecosystem. The other thing that we were talking about a bit, and that was tokens, being that you have, it sounded like, you know, with your work at Consensus and maybe even at Mirror, experience with like tokenomics, do you have any like hot takes on like meme summer? Maybe even some of the ways that like our meme summer, meme token, or we'll call them meme tokens for this podcast.
Soon to be meme summer.
Yeah, meme token summer. You know, when it comes to like both supporting a creator economy, but just overall in terms of like how they plug in to maybe this decentralized social narrative.
Yeah, also something I've thought about a lot. I think with tokens, like it's less about decentralizing the token and like trying to like put everything into the smart contract. It's kind of just realizing like if there's a meme token or a community or a creator token, like end of the day, you're trusting the creator. If the creator wants to change the supply or something or change the price dynamic or run an experiment, like there has to be an implicit trust in the creator of the token, you know? And like, we'll get into this with like the Byte Explorers, which is like the community I'm running, or it's like, I do have like a set of like five or six tokens where I'm very clear, like, hey, there are basically hooks in here where I can control like who gets to mint, who gets to transfer, when it's non-transferable, or if you want to trade it, you can only trade it through this pool at a specific price. You know, like I think that we're going to move more and more towards that kind of attitude, both with like Xerox Station uses, I think they call it like Rails as their contract thing. We've seen it mentioned like Zodiac from Safe before. I think it's like EIP 6900 now, or like Uniswap V4 hooks. Or even on Solana, you have like token extensions. You know, it's like the idea of like, okay, it's not just about minting and trading and providing liquidity, but it's like, how do we add more rules here where the creator can kind of more flexibly design things? And like, it's not exactly trustless, but it's like you have a social trust built over time with the community. And like that affects the tokenomics a lot more than just like, oh, I'm launching 10K PFPs. Who gets the first 2K in a whitelist? And then the other 8K is like a free for all in an auction, you know? I feel like that's where token design is evolving to. And that's like really nice to see. But I'm sure we'll also see some crazy, I don't know if I'm allowed to swear, but some crazy stuff happening.
Yeah, just because I didn't call them shit tokens doesn't mean that we can't swear in this podcast, man.
We're going to see some crazy shit with these extensions. I think it's going to get pretty interesting. So.
That's good. I mean, so I wonder if, so based on what you're saying, and again, this is, you know, do your own research, not financial advice. would you say that this is a more fair distribution of value than 10K NFT projects? Because it sounded like there was this like maybe either misalignment or just disparity just built in with these 10K PFP projects. Maybe this is a little bit more fair.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. So, I mean, I think this gets into like the analogy I use is like, if you're starting a new subreddit, your subreddit is the same at 10 members as it is at 100,000 members. You know, like you maybe get some more stickers or something, but the rules that govern your subreddit stay the same. Reddit maybe adds like a Twitter space feature once in a while, but like that's kind of it. Versus with tokens, like if I launch 10,000 tokens today as Bored Apes, and then I want to grow the community, I can't just launch another 10,000. I got to go do Mutant Apes as a derivative, you know? And with this new paradigm, like if we look at DGen on Farcaster, they're able to do, like Jacek is able to do more iterative kind of like airdrops or like inflation of supply. But I still think like it's like unexplored territory. Like if DGen does 5 airdrops, is it still as meaningful as like the first one? At what point is the community saturated? You know, at what point should you use different kinds of tokens, or like, should you just use points instead? You know? So I think like creators have a lot of tools now. Like you have the ERC-20, you have the 1155, you have a 6551, which is like a collection of ERCs. You have on-chain points now. So like there's a lot of tools here, and I'm sure we'll see like different communities try different methods and like mess things up at different points, just because it's like, oh, now that I have continuous airdrops, or like DGen might do an airdrop every 3 months. Like, I don't like that. That changes dynamics a lot. So it's hard to say.
Okay, so you teed me up perfectly here. You know, there's cool. all of these different data points that exist now, right? We're not just talking about 10K PFP collections. There's all of these different tokens that are being experimented with. And you even talked about on-chain points, which I think that that is an interesting one to talk about too, because, I mean, we were involved in a Cole points panel over at Proof of Data Summit.
I sat in the audience.
Yeah, and me too, for yours. So I wonder just generally, for those of people who are interested in like analyzing these data points firstly, like what yep. are some of the ways that you would say get started like this on Dune? But beyond that, because part of what you shared with me in terms of what we can talk about today is like, but you don't have to just use it purely for analytics. What else can right. they do with Dune?
Yeah, definitely. I would say if you're getting started on trying to analyze this, like the hard part is like, there's not a playbook, you know, it's not like analyzing the Uniswap airdrop where you can be like, oh yeah, they did an airdrop. There was a claim set of addresses. They had a liquidity like yield farming thing and it's consistent. You know, like if you're trying to analyze this, you have to like, at this point, like maybe 6 months from now, it's different. But right now, like you have to form your own opinion of like, okay, there's like give or take 4 or 5 tools. You have ERC-20 tokens, you have NFT tokens, you have attestations, and you have points, right? And you kind of have to form your own opinion as an analyst or a builder of like, realistically, like which of those are like, which of those work together at different stages? Like NFTs probably work really well if you're growing your community noun style. Like you're growing it one person a day at a time. ERC-20 works really well for something like DGen, where like I want to get this out to 100,000 people day one, you know? And at some point, like as the NFT community grows, maybe they're better suited for points, you know, versus like as the ERC-20 token community grows, they actually need NFTs. So like it's really important right now just to form your own opinion. There's nowhere I can point you to be like, hey, yeah, this is the standard for what these are used for, which is what makes it fun, you know. As for how to use Dune, I mean, Dune now, like we have probably as much off-chain data as we do on-chain data, you know, like we allow uploads now. So like Lens data is there, Farcaster data is there, Snapshot data is there. People are basically upload, like you just upload CSV basically, or like sync your whole database. And yeah, there's like basically a shit ton of public and private data on Dune, which is unlocking a lot of use cases. Like for example, like Yasek with all of the DGen airdrops, a lot of the work he does for like deciding the airdrops, and there's a few others I can't name, they use Dune, right? They just use Dune to kind of figure out like, oh, let me really social analyze like these communities, their actions, their on-chain actions, their off-chain actions, their social graph, and come up with like a list of addresses or something that I can use in a protocol. And I think Dune queries, like my thesis is like every Dune query is basically a smart contract in a sense, because you take a Dune query, you get a list of people, you could use that to set the criteria for like a boost.xyz incentivized quest. You know, you could use that to set voting and submission lists and points for Joke Race, you know? So I think Dune is going to become more and more like a core place where you understand and analyze this data, but also then take it out of Dune via the API and kind of plug it into these different protocols. And I think that's kind of one area we're really building towards, and like we're really building out our API more. Because it's like, it's nice if you have Dune for just viewing a few dashboards, but there's really a lot more you can do on Dune than just view dashboards. You know, like you're able to build it really into your community, into your product. Yeah, basically, Dune, trying to use it for more than dashboards, plug it into your like whatever data science pipeline, product pipeline. We have people who use Dune for like a CRM where you're like, you'll track contract developers on Optimism and kind of feed that into your own internal CRM to then do dev outreach. Like there's really a lot more you can do with it than just viewing dashboards.
Well, I mean, yeah. So, I mean, I tracked everything you said, and I had some questions, but you kind of answered one, I think, just right now through kind of this TLDR. And that was like, what are some of the cool experiments you see people running with Dune that aren't necessarily just analytics? And yep. You kind of were talking a bit about this idea of Dune being kind of this like allowless playlist platform, functioning almost as a smart contract, right? To me, it almost sounds like, and you can correct me if I'm wrong here, but like, are Dune dashboards then composable? Should we consider them composable pieces of the Web3 stack the same way that we do smart contracts then?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a hot take to make right now, but I completely believe it. Mm-hmm. I think like our off-chain flows and our on-chain flows are just going to get more and more connected with stuff like even like RetroPGF, you know, like mm-hmm. you can kind of consider that to be like a half on-chain, half off-chain kind of like protocol where Dune queries like play a part in it, where you want to go and research like who are you actually impacting, you know? I think it's like, yeah, we just have to get people more used to the idea. Like, for example, other use cases like Balancer, they have liquidity bootstrapping pools. They use Dune for basically tracking the status of the pools, the success of the pools, and like kind of live monitoring that as that goes through. The CR example is like CRM and marketing are becoming more common examples now, especially with Farcaster. People are like, oh, I want to see exactly who reacted to my cast, what their on-chain activity is, and use that to inform like my marketing insights and campaigns. You know, like it's getting pretty, and obviously like airdrops, stuff like what Yasik is doing. Like I can't name the number of teams in every ecosystem that basically use Dune for kind of doing like quality checks, like user segmentation, user retention analysis to kind of inform their airdrops. So yeah, there's really, I'm down to ideate on any of it. If someone's watching this and you're like, oh, is XYZ possible? Literally just like send me a DM and I'll be like, all right, let's noodle this out, you know?
Yeah, I want to actually jam with you a bit about this, and I'm not sure if now is the right time or even offline, but I remember when I first started building Mosaic, right? So for anybody who's like wondering, well, you know, what is Mosaic? It's a loyalty protocol built to, you know, reward or for brands to be able to use to reward their users or for creators to reward their fans, right? We use on-chain, off-chain data to be able to do that. When I first went to market with it, my first GTM strategy was to build out basically a mini Dune inside of it so that we can analyze that data and generate, you know, I guess, rewards more fairly, right? Or distribute rewards more fairly. And I started talking to a few investor friends of mine, and they literally just like hammered me with like, how is this different than Dune? And I'm like, you make a good point. And so I was like, okay, well, maybe I don't need to replicate the back end, right? It's more on the distribution anyways, rather than the actual analysis of the data. So I just found it funny that then, this is like last year, mid last year, when I first started tinkering with this idea, that some of what I, at least the way that I perceived Dune to behave or how you could use it was very different than obviously what people are using it for now. Like you said, for marketers, for creators to better understand their fan base, right? Their fan social graph, if you will. So that's really cool. And it's great to see that people are seeing it more as such. Personally, I've been using it a bit more to familiarize myself with the Farcaster social graph and how people are using it to hopefully build out a Frames native loyalty distribution, product.
Yeah.
Using Dune on the back end. So that's cool.
Exactly. Yeah. I have a Dune Frame tutorial coming out literally in 2 hours. The video is processing on YouTube right now. I built a user recommendation frame. So like if you click the frame button, it'll look at all your followers and be like, here's 4 recommended users based off of their like on-chain activity, their Farcaster activity, a bunch of other various factors, whether they're your reply guy or not. And yeah, it runs like with our API, you can get results in like 30 to 50 milliseconds. So it's a lot more possible now to build really, really aggregated and strong data into your like applications, or if we want to call frame, I think frames are applications, but yeah, if you want to build them into your frames. So
yeah, well, you know, that's interesting you mentioned that specifically, because one of the things that I've seen people talking about on Farcaster or on Warpcast, because that's the app that I use, is that their feed is just junk. They're like, yep. Oh, I wasn't so smart with the people I followed. I was just following all these people. And now it's just like intolerable. So people are like, the refuge are the channels. We're going to go to the channels and kind of connect with people better. But what you're saying is like, look, if you wanted to start from zero and kind of analyze your own social graph and get a recommendation on people you should follow based on your personal interests, use Dune. I think that's a pretty cool way of going about it too. That in itself is a nice little product feature.
Yeah. I would say the alpha right now is if you're a DevRel on any chain, whether that's Base, Optimism, ZK Sync, whatever, there's a lot of alpha you can get right now by seeing like who's active on Farcaster and then who's also actively deploying on your chain. There's a lot of alpha there that I think people haven't realized yet. So,
well, I don't think we're too far from a time when we're going to see Farcaster data be used for future airdrops, right? Because I think that we've seen a lot of different interesting data being used in these airdrop models. Yep. I'm sure that's coming, if not already set by someone for an airdrop that's coming in the next few weeks or months.
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy to push that agenda of being very active on Farcaster. So you won't hear me disagreeing. I'll be like, yeah, do it. include the data.
Yeah.
Include the data channel specifically.
100%. Yeah. You know, I'm actually in the data channel. I'd need to be more active there. I'm probably more active. Yeah. I don't share enough, though. I've also built my own channels there. So I try to be a good admin, moderator, whatever the title is for the people that manage those channels, to make sure there's a constant conversation happening. But that's also an interesting role and I guess requirement for building channels there. So let's definitely talk about Byte Explorer, because this is your project. This is something born from, I think, things that you've been doing for years. What is it? What are some of the things that you guys are building? How can people connect? Maybe in that order, not all at once.
Yeah, definitely not all at once. I mean, so I've been doing education in the space for 3-4 years now. And I've probably taught hundreds, if not thousands, of analysts at this point through like direct DMs, helping them with questions, one-on-one video calls. And it became pretty clear to me that like, while the data community is like well-connected on Twitter in terms of like sharing things, their actual work is pretty disjointed, you know? I think Dune, we do our best job in terms of like curating the very top dashboards. But like that only captures literally like 0.5% of what's out there and the work that's been done, you know? So looking around, I was like, all right, where is this data work being captured? I think you have some groups, like you have MetricsDAO that ran competitions. You have layer3.xyz that used to do data competitions. You have Dework boards. You used to have like 101.xyz. There's like 15 or 20 different platforms, you know? But the approach that all these platforms took is, oh, we're going to issue the reputation token, or we're going to issue the NFT that proves you did something. And even though it's like, yes, it's on chain, no one is going to sit there and go and figure out, oh, was this a data contribution or was this just something random, you know? So it occurred to me, it's like, okay, we have a strong community of data contributors. We need to be the ones who own the issuance of the token rewards, right? So that's kind of where like, that's the main problem I wanted us to set out to solve. So I used an ERC-6551 system, which is just, you have an NFT that can then own other tokens, ERC-20, 1155, 721, whatever. And I was like, all right, I'm going to start issuing quests where like, if I say, like, for example, completing a Dune or data bounty caster bounty, for those who don't know, bounty caster is a way of issuing bounties on Farcaster. If you complete one of those bounties, I'll give you one token per $10 of the bounty or something like that, you know? And I will decide on that with the community and then use Dune queries to be like, okay, take the people who did complete and like fulfill these criteria and give them these reputation tokens. They're non-transferable, but they start to track like who's done a bounty caster thing, who's done a joke race competition, who has just answered some questions in a channel, who's helped out with like Optimism Number Nerds research, like kind of aggregating all that of like, if these different platforms want to issue their own reputation tokens, that's fine, you know, but like the data community, we're owning and aggregating, kind of like deciding the hierarchy and semantic meaning of the tokens so that anyone outside or inside the community can come in, look at someone's 6551 token and be like, oh, I can see exactly their contributions and roughly know what it maps to. And that's kind of where we started. We've grown to about 180 people now, doing 3 to 4 different weekly quests. It's pretty fun. We're doing a quest with Optimism now, helping them analyze their airdrop. And it's a lot easier to get people engaged because it's like, hey, like, instead of you going out and solo finding this bounty and like maybe making some money, but also like your rewards aren't really tracked somewhere, it's like you can do this with a community of like almost 200 people. You earn reputation tokens. It's kind of just like a no-brainer. So it's a long rant, but that's what the Byte Explorers kind of like ethos and mission is. And I don't know. I mean, people probably can't really see links, but if you go to dune.com/CryptoDataBytes/Byte Explorers, there's a dashboard there that has literally everything about our community, like the member directory, how to join, what each token means, like what are all the quests, who's completed things, even our like economics of how much we earn. It's all on there. So
wow, that's incredible. We'll make sure to include this on all of our, you know, all the links when we do the final distribution. This looks awesome. Great. Yeah. I mean, so when you first started talking about, you know, Byte Explorers and what it is, it reminded me of an initiative that I just recently joined with Carl. You know, he's building HyperCerts, but also is a big supporter of Gitcoin and Optimism through their kind of data collective, if you will. And he recently started an initiative called Region Learnings. And I've just contributed as a moderator, just facilitator, maybe is the best word to put it. Because I'm definitely not the most experienced in that group when it comes to, you know, data. But I've really just wanted to facilitate some of these conversations. However, as you went deeper and deeper into like what you've built, it definitely feels like you're so much further ahead. And it just seems like maybe you've been doing this for some time and implemented some of your like token experience with like how you would reward people, which I think is super rad and definitely worth imitating. Copy pasta.
I've told other groups, if you're interested in building a similar sort of community for your domain, like reach out to me. I'm happy to help figure out something. I've gotten some outreach. We're still figuring some things out, but yeah, I mean, the core of this is all like the whole community is run through Station, their API and their contracts, and then Dune queries. Like that's literally it. I haven't written a single smart contract myself. I haven't written a single line of front-end code myself. Like it's kind of just like, just layer this organizational layer over everything that's already happening. That's it. Don't overcomplicate it. Like you're not building a whole protocol. You know, but yeah, I got tired of like, I've been writing about this stuff for years and I was like, no one's doing it. I'm just going to have to go out there, run this experiment and hope that people learn something from it. So, and it's been fun. We're officially 3 months old now. And yeah, it's been really fun.
So a few thoughts, obviously one of them, I think that what you're building here is really important. You know, for the space, just because I think that, I don't know if this is the right way of putting it, but the future of data actions are going to be done by an aggregate or like a coordinated group. I think that this idea of like doing things solo, sure, there's people who are skilled and would prefer to do that, but for myself, someone who I would consider myself from like a novice to an intermediary when it comes to that space, I like to work with others because I can both learn, but also kind of receive almost immediate feedback on how I can improve. But yeah, I think that's really rad to think of like some of the world's biggest data problems being solved by like these crypto explorers, right? Or Byte Explorers in this case.
Yeah.
That's a really cool idea. I really do like that.
Thank you. No, it's fun. It's fun. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. And I think you also kind of just reinforced what we talked about earlier with like data Dune in particular is what we were talking about then, but just data in general being like this composable layer in Web3. Yeah. And you talked a bit about how you've built this product by plugging in other solutions that are pre-built, right? So you kind of avoid having to build from scratch. And I think that's also a big piece of the puzzle here in terms of being building composable, I guess, elements in this ecosystem that can plug and play easily together.
100%. You know, I think it's like, I mean, it's on the ecosystem for like doing so well in building these elements. Like you look at something like 0xSplits, they've built a great product and like it's a very flexible set of contracts, you know, but like asking someone to set up a split that plugs into their token is actually still a pretty big ask. Like if you're less technical, like if I took some random creator from sound.xyz, like they probably would want to use it, but they can't yet, you know, like it's still a little too complex to figure out how to connect these layers, you know? And I think it's like, it's all data. If you become data literate or find someone who's data literate, they can connect these composable tools in ways that you've never imagined. So it's super exciting.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe that was the SaaS model from what I remember in Web 2. It's like you start plugging all of these things, you create a product, you go to market, and you know eventually you start kind of building those tools in the on the back end to support yourself once you've kind of developed the product beyond initial.
The less sexy way of putting it, but I do sometimes tell people it's like Byte Explorers is a test in Web 3 middleware. Is correct. It's less flashy. I don't tweet that because people don't want to participate in it. But if I was like, you know, pitching to VCs or something, I'd be like, yeah, this is the middleware basically of crypto. So
yeah. No, I love it.
Which has to be built eventually.
Absolutely. That just goes back to the argument, right, in this space about like we're building too much infra, but nothing really to kind of like capitalize on that infra.
Yep.
Basically with what you're building and even like potentially what Mosaic becomes, it's just leveraging the technology that's already there.
100%.
So it's much easier for the consumer to use and adopt, right? Because we can't all build a blockchain.
it's lucrative. You launch an L2 and launch a token, and but you know we're here to actually change things. So
I'd like to think so. I think this consumer crypto narrative hopefully isn't just a narrative, but it's something that people really believe in.
Yes. Yeah. If end of the day Farcaster launches a token and the token does well and there's no usage, then we failed for another cycle. So I hope that's not where we end.
Yeah, I agree with you. So give us, I guess, a bit of an invitation in terms of how we can get involved with Byte Explorers today.
Yeah, definitely. I think there's a couple of ways. One is just you mint a Byte Pass, which is 0.01 ETH, and you just join our Telegram group and you can kind of just lurk in there, ask questions, see what people are talking about. That's if you're like trying to become an analyst. I would say you should go that route and just like whatever level you are, there's conversations in there that will fit your style. If you're just trying to engage more with the data community, another initiative I've been working on is called Byte Light, which is kind of like Spotlight. And the idea is you can spotlight your questions or thoughts to this Byte Explorer community, right? So if you get a Byte Light token, I've been airdropping it to some people. You can also buy it on PseudoSwap for, I think it's 0.03 ETH or something. And the idea is like, if I have 3 Byte Light tokens and I ask a question in the data channel, anyone from the Byte Explorer community can go answer that question. And if they answer correctly, they get 3 Byte Insight tokens back. You know, so they get the equivalent amount of reputation of however many Byte Light tokens you've owned. So you can kind of see there's a marketplace of like, oh, if you really want your questions answered, go and buy 90 of these tokens because people are going to want to earn that token in their own reputation. And so that's an easy way. We've got people like Benji from Optimism. We've got like Mac over at Kiwi News who are like actively asking questions and like becoming closer with the data community through that mechanism. And again, that's something that already existed. Like you see it on Twitter all the time where people ask these data questions and like analysts will respond, but it kind of feels like it's like, what's it called? Not parallel. It's like like they're cross and there's nothing bringing them back together versus I feel like this kind of token and a community system, hopefully like it's like you continuously come back to it because you know, there's this like reward loop that exists. Mm-hmm. So that's an obvious one to me for like, again, if you're not trying to be an analyst, but you want to be closer to the community, go get a ByteLi token. I haven't tweeted the link to it yet, but I guess this is alpha, that the token's available on Pseudoswap and the price does go up as supply gets sold. So,
And there goes that tokenomic genius, in play.
Fun experiments. Pseudoswap is another one of those like underrated tools where it's like you can choose your own bonding curve, supplies, fees, whatnot in pools. And I think it's just a little too technical for most people. But it's like, it's super, like it's much more powerful than just, hey, I'm going to mint out these tokens and you go and bid and trade them on OpenSea. Like that just doesn't really make sense to me. Like that's so much friction. There's like four actions involved versus just like, hey, this is a bonding curve. We'll learn and set the prices as we go. And all you have to think about is just buying the token. And like, I'm not doing some burn to redeem where it's like, oh, you buy a token and you get to ask one question and then you burn it. I'm like, no. Let's just keep it simple. Like buy a token. You can ask as many questions as you want with it. Obviously, if you only hold one token and you're asking 100 questions a week, you're probably not going to get all of them answered, you know? So it's more of like a social trust experiment than it is like a pure transactional setup. So,
yeah. Well, that's good. I mean, so in a perfect world, where is Byte Explorers in the next year? Because I'd like to say 10 years, but this space moves so quick. Who knows what we're going to be in 10 years?
Yeah, 10 years is a lot. I mean, 1 year, I hope we're at 1,000 people. I hope we've run 3 different missions. So we're running one with Optimism now. Hopefully we do 2 more, maybe one with Polygon, maybe one with, I don't know, Arbitrum or something. I hope that people understand the reputation system and they're kind of more bought into it. Like I don't have to explain why Byte Explorers is issuing our own tokens. People just kind of get it of like, oh yeah, of course, a community that is very technical in a subject would like to own how they interact across platforms related to that subject. So hopefully that becomes like a standard even outside of the community, you know? And I think that brings me to the last one is like, there's at least one other community that's using our model that is like starting to scale. You know, I think if I hit those 3 things with this community, I will be very satisfied. While also, you know, still getting Dune's product out there more. So it's a lot to balance. So,
yeah, no, I mean, I think those are all very realistic and good goals to have. So I expect it to all happen for you in a year.
I appreciate the confidence. It means a lot.
I mean, at this point, I think you're sticking your reputation onto this product. And I think people are buying into that. Again, do your own research, not financial advice. After this call, I'm going to go find out how I can get involved because I'm a professional lurker, trade. I'll just be part of the conversations. Yeah, please do.
Yes. Yeah.
Cool, Matt.
Yeah. I mean, I think that brings us back like full circle to the first thing I was talking about of like these new token mechanics are all social trust based. Like the reason I can get Byte Explorers to work is because the community trusts me already. And they trust me to act with good intentions when issuing these tokens, when choosing how reputation scales. And I think that's like really important. Like above all, it's like, I have to maintain this community's trust. And like same thing with like Yasik with DGEN, like he also has to maintain, like it's less about what contracts he's deployed. It's more about like how people view him as like a leader and a person, you know? And like, it's kind of cool that we believe in that social layer now much more than just the protocol layer. Like that's like if you went back to last cycle, like that ethos was not there. You know, people did not trust the creators of these things at all, you know? So it was very, very different feeling.
Well, I mean, is there anything else that's left unsaid that we should cover now? I feel like we've been pretty good about it, but maybe we missed something.
I think we covered a lot. If people are still listening and they digested everything we said, maybe just go back, give it one more listen, see if there's stuff you missed. But I think that's we've given the people enough to think about.
Amazing. Well, where can we find you? On Twitter, but also more importantly on Farcaster.
Yeah. So it's funny because on every other social platform, I'm just Andrew Hong 5297. But my pseudonym is Ilemi, I-L-E-M-I. So that's what I went with on Warpcast. So if you go to Warpcast, search up Ilemi. But yeah, Andrew Hong 5297 on basically all platforms, email, Telegram, everything, LinkedIn too, if you want to connect with me there. And yeah, I'm very responsive. You can DM me any question. I'm happy to ideate. And again, if you're trying to get into the space, check out the newsletter, read.cryptodatabytes.com. Check out the Byte Explorers. Again, it's a community for all levels. Anyone can join. I'm very hands-on there in terms of like helping you get the most you can out of your data journey. So,
love it. Well, thank you so much, Andrew, for your time, for taking my invitation to come and chat with us. I personally learned a lot and definitely will be participating more in your initiatives too pretty soon.
Amazing. Thank you, Humpty.
Cool.